This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Mass shootings always provoke grief, a search for answers, and the depressing understanding that they will happen again. Today we will talk about two of these events, one that grabbed headlines 4 years ago, another that happened last week. We'll also focus on what goes through the mind, the soul, and the spirit, the difficult path to forgiveness and peace of mind after a mass shooting. We begin in Virginia. Last Friday, an employee at the Virginia Beach Municipal Center opened fire, killing 12 people there and wounding others. There was an immediate outpouring of sadness and political responses. Today, Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam just announced that he will call the legislature back to work this summer for a special session on gun control. Workplaces across the nation are dealing with these shootings. Back in February, a disgruntled employee in Aurora, Illinois, killed 5 workers and wounded 5 police officers at his workplace the day he was fired. How are companies preparing for this type of violence? And how can they try to prevent it in the first place? Joining us from Minnesota Public Radio is Jillian Peterson, a professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul. Professor Peterson, welcome to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
What have you learned in your studies of mass shootings? I understand that you've been studying them for the last 2 years as part of a Department of Justice grant. What would you say is the one or two biggest takeaways from your research?
Sure. So I would say we've learned that mass shootings happen when kind of 4 things come together. You've got a person with a troubled history. So we see lots of early childhood trauma, mental health concerns, troubled family relationships. The person comes to a crisis point, which in workplace shootings tends to be they've gotten fired or something's happened at work, but it can also be something in their personal life. And that crisis often comes with being suicidal because these acts are murder suicides. Typically, people don't have an out plan. Then we have kind of a script for this form of violence. So these have a social contagion aspect to them. We tend to see these shootings cluster. And shooters study other shooters and use them as models. And then the 4th piece is you have means and access to do it. So access to guns. And in workplace shootings, this tends to be handguns that are legally owned by the perpetrator.
So let me just go back over those 4. The troubled history, usually something in the shooter's background, some kind of an inflection point, a crisis point often that leaves them concurrently suicidal, some kind of a script, including some sort of social contagion related to other incidents that causes them to cluster, and then the means and the access, means to the location where they plan to perpetrate the act, and also access to the weapons, which you say primarily are acquired lawfully. Is that right?
Exactly.
What about the possible motives for this kind of violence? I mean, I mentioned the guy in Aurora. He had been fired and then came back and opened fire. The guy, or the shooter, I should say, in Virginia Beach had resigned just before the shooting happened. Is it fair to say that this tends to happen after someone has kind of resigned, fired, left the company and said, well, now that I don't work there anymore, I have nothing to lose? Or is there more to it than that?
You know, I think there is a bit more to it than that. What we're seeing is that these are angry suicides, I would say. So the person is planning to die in the act, but they also have a grievance and they plan to take other people with them. So whether that's a church or a school or a workplace, it's different for each person. But I would say angry suicides kind of describes it. And then there's this piece of also wanting it to go viral and wanting notoriety for the act.
So not just what you did, but making sure the world knows what you did.
Exactly.
We got a few questions about workplace shootings. Aaron wrote on our Facebook page, can you address the different security measures workplaces take and which ones of them are actually effective? It seems to me that there's a lot more danger to you at work from your coworkers who have access to your building than there is from a stranger coming in from outside. Is this a true perception, Professor?
That is absolutely true. So in about 90% of workplace mass shootings, it's an employee who's carrying out the act. So it's someone who knows the building, knows the security procedures, knows the lockdown procedures, has been through all the training, and knows everybody in the building. So that makes security really difficult. And I think we're putting a lot of time and energy and resources into security, which is important, but we're not focusing on other pieces like understanding that crisis point and getting involved at that point.
Jillian Peterson is a professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota. We'll have more with her just ahead. Stay close.
Support for 1A and the following message come from the Platinum Card from American Express. Conversations and civil debate in our society push us forward and connect us with the rest of the world. With the Platinum Card, earn 5x membership rewards points on flights booked directly with airlines or with American Express Travel. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Don't live life without it. Visit americanexpress.com/exploreplatinum. Terms apply. Support for NPR and the following message come from VSP Individual Vision Plans, offering coverage for a low monthly cost if you don't have vision coverage through an employer. You'll get access to the nation's largest network of independent doctors and hundreds of name brand frames. Plus, you can save more than $200 a year. VSP believes you deserve to see better for life for less. Discover for yourself at needvspcoverage.com.
Back now to our conversation on workplace shootings with Jillian Peterson, a violence researcher and forensic psychologist. More workplaces, Professor, I should say, including the one that I'm sitting in right now, have been doing active shooter training. It's gotten more and more prevalent at schools, workplaces, universities. Do these trainings actually work? Do we have any data on how effective they are or how we would even define efficacy in this case?
Yeah, as a researcher, that's really tricky to study, right? It's hard to know, are there instances where more people would have died had they not been through that training? That may very well be true. I think what gets tricky is balancing wanting people to be prepared and ready and trained for the worst case scenario. So it is muscle memory and they know what to do. Yet on the other hand, we know that these drills are traumatizing and affect mental health. And we also know that they may contribute to the social contagion aspect of this in terms of triggering fascination and handing people the script for it. So it gets really tricky to balance those two things, I think, as a place of work.
I'm glad you mentioned the fascination thing. I mean, it kind of occurred to us that if the majority of these workplace shootings are being perpetrated by an employee, past or present, and if that employee theoretically was at that training, how effective could it be? Because the perpetrator now knows what the company's plans are to deal with the shooting and can therefore strategize around them.
Exactly. And in the worst case scenario, that training can actually be used to increase casualties, which we've seen in a number of school shootings.
Then why are we doing them?
I think people want to feel prepared. I think people want to know that they have the skills and we want to build some confidence in that area. And also, we haven't had a lot of other options. I think employers want to feel like they're doing something. And so training people feels like you're doing something. But what we're advocating for, I work for an organization also called the Violence Project, and we've developed training around things like identifying signs of a crisis, de-escalating people in crisis, suicide prevention, identifying warning signs and setting up systems to report things and intervention strategies. And I think those things are just starting to work into the workplace.
What do you make of this workplace shooting, or really mass shooting survival technique known as run, hide, fight, in that order? The first thing you should do if you can is just run, get the heck out of there as far away as you can, fast as you can. If there's nowhere for you to run, find some place to hide and stay there until law enforcement shows up. And if there's nowhere to run and no place to hide, then prepare yourself to defend yourself if indeed you have to. Run, hide, fight. What do you make of that?
You know, I've talked to a lot of people with this research. I've talked to survivors. I've talked to people who conduct training. I've talked to perpetrators and family members of perpetrators. And what's tricky is I think no one knows how they're going to respond if this happens. We don't know. And every situation is so different that it's hard to train people in how to respond. I also think that we're putting a lot of energy into minimizing casualties, which is important if this happens. But what we could be doing is putting a lot more energy into preventing the act from ever occurring in the first place. And I think the more resources we can put there and the increased understanding, the better.
Well, let's talk about that then. What strategies have you found work in terms of preventing this type of violence?
Well, there is a model called threat assessment, which some schools and employers are using. I think it can be softer, though, and just thinking about kind of employee well-being. So training employees in how to spot when a coworker is not doing well and how to have the confidence and the resources and to know how to report that and to who to report it to. And then you want to make sure if that is reported that it's not just met with punishment. It's not that that employee gets automatically fired because then no one will want to do it. instead responding with help, with concern, and with intervention and resources, and having a team in place that can talk about what do we need to do in this case? Is this a real threat? Do we need to bring in law enforcement? Is this a mental health concern? Is this an HR concern? I think having those conversations, and it's going to look different within each culture and within each workplace setting.
What kinds of warning signs are we talking about?
Changes in behavior. Market changes in behavior. Each person's crisis looks different, so there's no kind of checklist. Mm-hmm. But I think anytime someone is acting differently, talking about being suicidal, we're seeing that a lot in these cases, is that people are talking about being suicidal, leaking things online and in person, hurting themselves, even things like starting to gather weapons, seeming depressed, bizarre thinking. Any market change would be something for concern.
Kay Milani asks, how should companies address an aggressive employee?
That's tricky. One thing we're trying to do is teach people these verbal de-escalation skills. So I started out actually teaching de-escalation and crisis intervention to police. And now I've been doing that in so many more contexts, from reporters to hotel staff to city desk clerks. People want to know, how do I verbally de-escalate someone who is acting aggressive? And there's techniques, verbal, nonverbal, situational skills that can be really helpful in calming someone down.
Before I have to let you go, Professor, I know that some of these techniques are beginning to propagate. I mean, WAMU, the station that produces 1A, is owned by American University, and we have had trainings here at AU where they do focus on prevention, on trying to prevent these things from happening. I bet there's a lot of small business owners across the country who are like, I am just trying to keep the books balanced and the lights on, and now you're telling me I have to teach my employees, some of whom may be part-time or transient or freelance, to keep an eye out for someone who works beside them who may come to work and shoot them. This feels kind of onerous for some business owners. What would you say to them to kind of ease that concern?
Yeah, and I would say a bigger concern, these are rare events. They don't feel like they're rare because they affect so many people and they're so devastating when they happen. But what we're really looking out for is someone who's in trouble, someone who's having a crisis, someone who's having mental health concerns or actively suicidal or going through personal problems. It's really just creating a culture of concern rather than a culture of, you know, I'm looking out for the next shooter. I'm just looking out for a coworker who doesn't seem to be doing well, and I know what I can say and do to help them.
Professor Jillian Peterson teaches criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University in St. Paul. Professor, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
Human behavior doesn't always make a ton of sense, at least on the surface.
I said, would you mind if I give the dogs a little piece of cracker with some hot sauce on it and without, and see what they choose?
Hidden Brain, a spicy podcast about science, psychology, and why people do what they do.
After more than 50 years of lies and silence, a witness to the attack on Jim Reeb finally tells the truth about what she saw.
I didn't know whether they'd gonna get off or not, but I was glad when they did. Even though they were guilty, and I knew they were guilty, and they knew they were guilty.
It's White Lies from NPR. Listen and subscribe now.